Okay, we're beginning here on the top of your Daled Amud Aleph by the two dots. Rabbi Shimon Machshir Behiluch. If you remember in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon says that Holacha is a dispensable type of avoda because you can shech the korban immediately adjacent to the Mizbeach. And therefore, since you can bypass having to do Holacha, Holacha is not significant enough that one can have a machshava of lo lishma and be posel the korban during Holacha. Again, yesterday we discussed the possibilities, and we'll see that more in depth than today, as to whether Rabbi Shimon really believes that Holacha is just not an avoda, or he believes that it is an avoda, but not a significant enough of an avoda that it will impact in terms of machshava. So now we have a statement from Reish Lakish, Shem Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Mode Rabbi Shimon, Beholachat Chataot Apnimiyot, Shemachshava Poselet Behu, Hoyo Ba'avuda, So Rabbi Shimon agrees with regards to the Chatot HaPnimiyot, which we've noted many times, include the Par of Seir, Shiyom HaKippurim, the Par Helam Dover Shel Tzibur, the Seir of Avodah Zarah for the Tzibur, as well as the Par Kohen Mashiach. These are korbanot that are shechted outside in the Azara, and then their dam is taken into the Heichal to do whatever matnot dam are required of them. So what is being pointed out here is that, unlike the case by the Kodshei Kodashim and Kodshim Kalim that are done in the Azara and on the Mizbeach HaChitzon, where you can shech the animal immediately adjacent to the Mizbeach, and therefore you don't need Holacha because you can do everything directly on the Mizbeach without ever having to move your space. Nevertheless, when it comes to the Chatot HaPnimiyot, that is not true because you have to take the Dam into the Heichal. And therefore it is an Avoda She'enu Yachol Davatla. It's an avoda that you cannot dispense with because you must move from where you shech the animal into the heichal in order to do the matnot dam. Now Rashi over here says, why is it yefshar levatla? Why don't we just shech the animal inside of the heichal and have the same result as doing it near the mizbech hachitzon, which is you shech the animal immediately adjacent to where you need to do the matnot dam? So the answer that Rashi says is dalav orach ara lishchot beheichal, that it is not considered to be proper etiquette to shech the korban inside of the heichal. And the Rekiv Eger in the Gilyon HaShas points you to a Balei HaTosafot later on in the Masechta that also quotes this Rashi and uses it as reason why you can't shech inside of the heichal is because lav arach ara lishchot beheichal. It's considered to be a lack of etiquette or improper to shech inside of the heichal. On the other hand, the Shita Mikubetz in No Gimel asks on this explanation of Rashi that we're going to see later on in the Masechta that shlamim, that you shecht inside of the heichal, are ksherim. So that shows you that shechita inside of the heichal is fine, especially with shlamim, and that is because there's a kal v'chomer. There's a requirement that the shlamim be done or shechted petach ol moed. So it can't be that the petach ol moed is going to be better than the ol moed itself. So if you can do it, or there's a requirement to do it petach ol moed, then certainly if you do it inside the ol moed, it should be kasher. And based on that, the Gemara concludes that shechting a shlamim inside of the heichal is fine. But what happened to Rashi's statement over here, the lav orach ara? For that reason, the Shita Mekubetz brings an alternate reason, and he says is that's because all these korbanot that are chatot pnimiyot are kodshei kodashim. And kodshei kodashim have a requirement that they be shechted in the tzafon, that to be done a yerech ha-mizbeach tzafona, north of the northern side of the mizbeach, which will come up and again in today's daf later on. And therefore, you have to do it in a position or a place that is considered to be tzafon. The Gemara later on in Daf Chof, Bava Machloket Tanaim, as to where is tzafon, or what is exactly incorporated inside of tzafon, but nobody believes that tzafon goes into the heichal, or that is considered to be north, and therefore there's no way to shech the Kodshei Kodashim in the heichal, and still be able to accomplish the necessity for it to be in tzafon. So says the reason Shlamim can be shecht in the heichal is because it's Kodshim Kalim, and Kodashim Kalim don't require tzafon. And that's why they can be shechted in the Eichal. But Kodshei Kodashim, they require tzafon, it can't be shechted in the Eichal. And that's the reasoning why Eifshar Levatla, it's a Navoda that has to be done outside of the Eichal. Based on that, the bringing of the Dam into the Eichal is an indispensable part of the Hakravata Korban. And based on that, Rabbi Shimon should agree in that case that a Machshava will be poselet during that Avodah. Va'amar Rabbi Shimon, ko she'enu al mizbech kitzon kishlamim, ein chayvin alav mishum pigol. Wait a minute, didn't Rabbi Shimon say that pigol and machshavet pigol only has impact on things that are domed l'shlamim? The source for pigol is shlamim. And therefore, as the paradigm from which we learn out pigol, Rabbi Shimon believes, then only things that are similar to the Shlamim, where their avoda is done on Mizbeach HaChitzon, or in the areas outside of the Eichal, do they have an issue of pigol? But anything that is done in the Heichal has no considerations with regards to pigol, because it's outside the world of pigol, because the shlamim never ends up inside of the Heichal. Amar Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, mod haya lipsol mikal b'chomer. Rabbi Yossi says that, yes, you're right. Rabbi Shimon believes that pigol has no application inside of the Heichal, or the matnot dam that are done inside of the Heichal. That's with regards to the chiyuv karet that is associated with pigol or a machshevet chutz lizmano. But as far as making the korban pasul, he agrees that the korban is pasul, despite the fact that there is no punishment of karet. So it'll be a toned down pigol, which is not like the pigol of the shlamim or something that's done in the azara, but there'll be a chiyuv karet associated with eating or consuming something that you had a machshevet chutz lizmano about, but it will still have a disqualifying effect, which is if you have such a machshova, there won't be a chiyuv karet, but it will disqualify the korban, and that is learned from a kal v'chomer. When you do it shlo lishmo, the korban is still kasher. Pasul bechatat. By a chatat, shlo lishma, it disqualifies the korban. So here you have a chumra in chatat, which is chatat is affected by lo lishma. Shlamim is not affected by lo lishmo. Chutz lizmano, the issue of chutz lizmano or pigo, shuposel b'shlamim, that disqualifies the shlamim. Enu din, shifsol bechatot, then certainly pigo, should be a disqualifying effect on the chataot. Now Rashi over here says, if you're going to make such a kal v'chomer, then you should have application to make it, not only that it's pigol to make it pasul, it should make it pigol that's chayav be'koret. Because if you say, lo lishmo bishlamim is kasher, lo lishma bechatat is psula, so if pigol is problematic by shlamim, then certainly it should be problematic by a chatat, and then you would be then in a position which you are now saying, pigol that applies by shlamim, applies to the chatat as well. Well, pigol by the shlamim is a pigol of karet. So Rashi over here says that that's governed by a principle called dayod avo min adin leyot kenidon. When you learn a kal v'chomer, the kal v'chomer can't be greater than the source for the kal v'chomer. Now he writes over here, chutz lizmano aposel b'shlamim, miu karet lo nafkalan bo mina, megha kal v'chomer, yikoach shalo lishmo ati, because the source for the kal v'chomer is lo lishmo, just like lo lishma by a chatat is only able to be posel, it does not create a chiyuv karet, then when we extend that onto pigol and say a chatat now also is disqualified when there's a machshevet pigol, it can't be any more than the lo lishma, which taught us that principle. And so therefore Rashi says it can't be greater than the lo lishmo or the lo lishma, which is the source for the fact that pigol would be disqualifying by the chatat. And that limitation makes it that there is no chiyuv karet associated with it, only that it makes it pasul. So now the Gemara says, ashkechan chutz lizmano, that works for chutz lizmano, in terms of a machshevet pigol, when the machshava dealt with time. Chutz limikomo, minalan. How do we know that when you have a machshava to do it outside of the location where you're supposed to do it, that that machshava also has impact? And the problem being that chutz limikomo is also sourced out of the korban shlamim. So if the paradigm from which you learn is a korban shlamim, and Rabbi Shimon says when you have a korban shlamim, you can't apply it to chatot pnimiyot because they are in the echal, because the shlamim is done in the azara and in the mizbeach hachitzon. So just like that is a qualifying statement with regards to chutz lizmano, which says it doesn't have application by chatat, same thing should be true by chutz limkomo, a machshava about doing something outside of the proper location where it's supposed to be done. Again, it has the same qualifications as chutz lizmano, with the exception of the fact that it's not chayav karet, which we'll learn from miutim in the psukim later on. So the Gemara says, imi chutz lizmano, if you want to learn it from chutz lizmano and say, just like chutz lizmano is posel chatot pinimiot, so too chutz limkomo should be posel chatot pinimiot. Malo chutz lizmano shekein karet. Maybe chutz lizmano is more powerful and affects the chatot pinimiot because there's a chiyuv karet associated with it. Even though in this instance, the karet will not be applicable. We only made it pasul with the chatot pinimiot. But nevertheless, since chutz lizmano conceptually is something that results in karet, maybe that chumra is what allows it to make the chataot of pnimiyot psulot. But chutz limkomo, which is not a chiyuv karet, maybe that would not be the case. Ibish lo lishma, if you want to learn it out of lo lishma, just like lo lishma is disqualifying by a chatat, so too chutz limkomo should be disqualifying. Problem is that Shelo Lishma Shekein Noheg Bebama. What's unique about Shelo Lishma is that it not only has application inside of the Mikdash, but it also has application outside of the Mikdash. And that is, a person can have a machshava with regards to the way Bama. There were periods in time during Klal Yisrael's entry into Eretz Yisrael where Bamot were mutarot, which means that you were able to put up a private Mizbeach anywhere you wanted in your backyard, and be makriv a korban. That was true until the building of Mishkan Shiloh. From the time they entered into Eretz Yisrael until the building of Mishkan Shiloh. And then after the destruction of Mishkan Shiloh, from that time until the Binyan Beit HaMikdash, once again, Bamot were mutarot. So when the Mizbeach was in Nov and Givon, during that period of time, Bamot were mutarot. Bamot have some trappings that are similar to the requirements of korbanot in the Mikdash, but they have some things that are differentiated. So over here, what the Gemara is pointing out is that with regards to Lo Lishma, the din of Lo Lishma has equal application to korbanot that are brought in the Mikdash, as well as korbanot that are brought on a bama. So maybe the reason that Lo Lishma has application to Chatot Apnimiyot is because it's also problematic with regards to a bama, as opposed to Chutz Limkomo, which has no application by a bama. You can only speak about Chutz Limkomo when you're bringing a korban to a central location, or a specific location. The specification of the location makes it that there are boundaries within which you can do this. Whether that means within the Mikdash, whether that means within Yerushalayim. And therefore you can have a machshevet chutz limkomo. But with regards to a bama by definition is something that can be put up anywhere. Since it can be put up anywhere, there are no boundaries to it, and therefore you can never have a chutz limkomo. Chutz lizmano will have application by a bama, because there are zmanim for korbanot. And the same zmanim that apply in the Mikdash will apply to a bama. So as far as negating the possibility of learning from Lo Lishma to Chutz Lizmano, that doesn't exist. But when it comes to Chutz Limkomo, which is not applicable by a bama, then maybe you can't learn from Lo Lishma to Chutz Limkomo. Mar says, wait a minute, Shelo Lishma and Bamai Noeg. Where is the application of Lo Lishma? There are only two korbanot that are pasul when it comes to Lo Lishma, and that is Pesach and Chatat. Pesach v'chatat v'bama lo karvu. When it comes to a Pesach and Chatat, they are not brought on a bama. The Gemara later on will teach us that a bama only allows one to bring korbanot that are nidar v'nidav. Korbanot that you can bring as voluntary offerings, which include olot and shlamim, or manifestations of the shlamim. So those korbanot can be brought on a bama. But obligations or chovot cannot be brought on a bama. And that would preclude a chatat. It also preclude a Pesach. Although there is a little nuance within the Pesach, that the Gemara will discuss later on as well, which is that you can bring the Korban HaPesach on a Bamat Tzibur, which is when you have a central Mizbeach that acts as a Bama. That Bama you can bring a Korban HaPesach on. That's what happened in places like Nov and Givon, where the Mizbeach was centralized. There you could bring your Korban HaPesach. But in general, Pesach and Chatat are not relevant to the world of Bama. Given that, then if the Chatat isn't relevant to the world of Bama, that can't be the Chumrah, or the reason Lo Lishma is disqualifying. Because Lo Lishma disqualifies a chatat, even though it doesn't go on a bama. And that would then allow you to extrapolate from Lo Lishma to Chutz Limkomo. V'baitema hekeshahu. Some say that it's a hekesh. Because the posuk that they use by the Shlamim, that teaches you about Chutz Lizmano, also contains within it the restriction for Chutz Limkomo. And that is, Shlishi Zeh Chutz Lizmano. In the pasuk that we quoted yesterday a number of times, Im ha'achol ye achel mibzar zevach shlama b'yom ha'shlishi lo yiratzeh, ha'makriv oto lo yuchashev lo pigol iyeh. So there, the Gemara is darshaning that the shlishi in that pasuk teaches you about chutz lizmano. Pigol, which I noted before, the word pigol in the Gemara means chutz lizmano, but pigol in the Torah means chutz limkomo. And that's what it says here, pigol zeh chutz limkomo. So you have a juxtaposition in the Pasuk, or a hekesh in the Pasuk, between the Yom HaShlishi and the Pigul, which is the Chutz Limkomo. And given the hekesh, just like Chutz Lizmano creates a disqualification of the Chatot HaPnimiyot, so too Chutz Limkomo will create that same disqualification. And Rashi notes here and noted before, when you have a hekesh, it's not subject to logic. A hekesh tells you, despite the lack of logic in the connection, the fact that they were put together tells you to learn it, irrespective of whether it's logical or not. So now we're going to have a statement about Rabbi Shimon, but using Rabbi Shimon in connection with other Tanaim that have opinions, and those Tanaim then will affect Rabbi Shimon's major opinion, which is if the halacha is not necessary, then that would limit the scope of where you have a problem, or you can have a machshevet psul. And that is, Amar Rava, Imtim Salomar, Rabbi Shimon Sabar Lakibre. If Rabbi Shimon holds like his son, Rabbi Elazar be Rabbi Shimon, which coming up on Daf Chof in the Masechta, we will see a machloket, as I noted before, about what is called Safon with regards to being on the northern side of the Mizbeach. So if he subscribes to his son's position, Damar Ben Olam Mizbeach Safon, that even in the area that is between the Mizbeach and the Ulam is still called Safon, then the Machshava that we spoke about before that Rabbi Shimon agrees can have impact and be posel the Korban, whether it's Lo Lishma, whether it's Chutz Lizmano or Chutz Limkomo, all of those Machshavot have impact on the bringing of the Dam into the Heichal, because, as we said before, it's an indispensable part of the Korban. He has to bring the Dam in there to do the Avoda. But now we're going to limit the scope of that. And that is, there's a Machloket, which revolves around two issues, both of which we'll see later on in the Misechta. First of which is, where is the placement of the Mizbeach? Where does the Mizbeach sit in the width of the Azara and the width of the Migdash? Is it centered? Is it skewed to the south? Is it skewed to the north? Is it partially skewed? There are tons and tons of opinions, both amongst the Tanaim, as well as the Rishonim, and we'll get there. But wherever you have that placement of the Mizbeach, then you have to be a Yerech HaMizbeach Tzafona. You have to be on the northern side of the Mizbeach in order for the Shechita of Kodshei Kodashim to be Kasher. The starting opinion in the Gemara and Daf Chof is that of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, who believes that the location where you're allowed to shecht Kodshei Kodashim is only the area that is directly north of the Mizbeach. Now, the Mizbeach's ramp was on the southern side of the Azara, and that means that the face of the Mizbeach is on the southern side. Then the other side, facing the width of the Mikdash, was the northern side. Remember that the Mikdash is skewed to the west. The Heichal is in the west. It's an east-to-west laying structure, and that the Kodesh and Kodesh HaKodashim are on the western side. The Mizbeach is perpendicular to the Heichal, with the ramp on the southern side, and then back of the Mizbeach beyond on the northern side. And there is where you have to shecht the Kodshei Kodashim, which is by the northern side. And so what Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda believes is that it's just a strip from the eastern edge of the Mizbeach to the western edge of the Mizbeach, going northwards. That's the area where you're allowed to shecht Kodshei Kodashim. The opinion of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon is that it's not limited to the width of the Mizbeach, but even extends towards the Ulam, towards the Heichal. Again, we'll get to this when we're there on Daf Chof, but what that does is allows you the opportunity or the ability to shech very close to the Ulam. And that's what Rova is noting over here, that Rabbi Shimon subscribes to his son, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, that means that he thinks you can shech the Korban, not just opposite the Mizbeach, on the northern side of the Mizbeach, but even skewed to the western side, right by the doorway to the Ulam. Now, the Heichal, or the area of the Kodesh and Kodesh Kodeshim, is made up of different sections. There's a front of the area, which is a wider area called the Ulam, which was like an entrance hallway or an entrance area. And then there was the Heichal, where you had the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Now, the Matnot Dam need to be done in the Heichal. They need to be done either in the Kodesh or the Kodesh HaKodeshim. And you have to walk from the Azara into the Ulam, and then through the Ulam into the Heichal. So what Rava is pointing out is, if you can move the Shechita, the Kodshei Kodashim, all the way to the doorway of the Ulam, then the problematic Machshavot that you can have during Holacha will only start from the Petach HaUlam. Because otherwise, it's not necessary. It's not indispensable. Even if you shecht it skewed further to the east, that doesn't mean that that Holacha is necessary. Because you could have shechted it all the way to the west, right by the entranceway to the Ulam. That means that your halacha that is indispensable is only when you enter the Ulam and then reach the Heichal. And that's what he's just said here. Rava says, if he holds like his son, Damar ben Ulam Nizbeach Tzafon, that the area between the Nizbeach to the Ulam is still called the northern side of Nizbeach, Ein machshava moelet b'holachat chatot ha'pnimiyot, elo mipetach ha'ulam b'lifnim. Then the only indispensable halacha is from the petach of the Ulam inwards towards the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kodeshim. And now we're going to look at other Tanaim's opinions that will also have impact. Imtim Salomar Savalaki Reb Yehuda, And if he holds like Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda has a opinion, the Amar, Toch Hazarah Mikadesh, that anything inside the Hazarah has the same status as the Mizbeach. It's based on the Psukim by Shlomo Melech when he consecrated the Beit HaMikdash. Over there it says they had tons and tons of korbanot, so many that they overflowed off the Mizbeach, and then they used the Hazarah itself like a Mizbeach. So Rabbi Yehuda believes that the entire Hazarah, b'diavad, can be used as a Mizbeach, or as the possibility of acting as the Mizbeach. Given that, Ein Machshava Mo'elet Bo'lachat Siluk Bazichim El Mipetach Eichal V'Chutz. That means that the possible improper machshava that could impact the bazichim of Livona that were on the shulchan that is in the Eichal that has the lechem apanim on it would only be impactful from the entranceway to the Eichal out to the entranceway of the ulam. Every week they used to put the lechem apanim on the shulchan. Along with them were two utensils holding Livona frankincense in them. And then when Shabbat came, they were makriv that frankincense on the Mizbeach. And that was matir, the lechem apanim, for the Goanim to eat it. So the placing of the Livona on the Mizbeach is similar to the placing of the dam on the Mizbeach. It is a matir. And since it is a matir, it's something that you can have a machshava during that avoda. So just like by Zvikat Adam, you can have a machshava. So too, the Bazikhim, you can have a Machshava. So now, that Machshava, according to Rabbi Shimon, will only be applicable when you're doing Holacha. You're taking it from the Shulchan out to the Mizbeach, if it is indispensable Holacha. So now, what we've done is narrowed the amount of space that you have to walk. And that is because the Shulchan can be placed anywhere in the Kodesh. It generally is found on the northern side of the Kodesh within the Eichal, skewed towards the western side of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. But nevertheless, anywhere in the Eichal, in the Kodesh, would be kasher for the Shulchan. So technically, the Shulchan could be right by the doorway of the Eichal. That means that you could take the Bazichim right from there, the Petach HaEichal, the entranceway into the Kodesh, and then you could carry them out to the Hazarah. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, once you hit the Hazarah itself is already like the Mizbeach. So then it's, again, you don't have to walk to the real Mizbeach, because if you were makriv them there, right on the spot, you already would have accomplished what you need to do, which is put them on the Mizbeach. And therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, who says that only indispensable holacha allows for machshava psul to impact, then the only indispensable holacha that you have here, walking here, would be from the Petach HaEichal to the exit of the Ulam, because that is the distance that you would have to carry the Bazichim of Livona out of the Kodesh to get it to the Hazarah or to the Mizbeach outside. And you can see this all on the diagrams that I sent out, that diagram exactly what's being said over here. Now, v'imtim salomar savar kedushat HaEichal v'ulam chadai, and if he subscribes to the opinion that thinks that the Ulam has the same kedusha as the Eichal, then ein machshava moelet el mipetach ulam velachutz. Then you would have very limited scope as to where there's indispensable walking. If the ulam has the same status as the Eichal, that means that the shulchan could be even placed in the ulam. Technically, it's not there, but technically it could be placed there right by the entranceway to the ulam. If that's the case, then you only need to walk it from the entranceway to the ulam right out into the Hazarah. That means the width of the doorway of the ulam, which is actually 5 amot, that'd be the only indispensable holacha that would take place, and that'd be the only place that you could have a machshevet psul that would have impact according to Rabbi Shimon. V'imtzim tzalomar tocha petach kelifnim, and if you believe that the width of the entranceway has the same classification as the ulam itself, then at that point, ein machsheva moelet afilu psiachat, elek b'kdei hoshatat yodo. Then there would be no indispensable holacha, because you place the shulchan right in the width of the doorway of the ulam, right in that 5 amot. It could be sitting there. The kohen could be standing there, put his hand in, take the bazichim off of there, and put them down on the floor of the Hazarah. This is still built upon. The Imtim Salomar is built on the previous opinion, which is Rabbi Yehuda, who believes that the whole Hazarah is mikudash, be used like a mizbeach. Then all he has to do is a shatat yado. Just stick his hand in, take it off the shulchan, and then be makriv it on the floor of the Hazarah. So he doesn't have to take a single step. The only indispensable action is hoshatat yad, extending your arm to move it from the shulchan onto the floor of the Hazarah. And that would be then the only indispensable act that has to happen here, which is the extending of your arm to bring the bazichim out. That means that no walking would have any impact, according to Rabbi Shimon, if you combine the opinions of Rabbi Yehuda, who says that the entire Hazarah is mikudash, and if you believe that the ulam has the same kedusha as the Eichal, and the petach ha-ulam, the width of the doorway of the ulam, has the same status as the Ulam itself, combining all of those opinions, then there really be no halakha according to Rabbi Shimon. The only thing you have is the extending of your arm, which is necessary, and we're going to ask on the second half of today's daf, whether Hoshatat Yad has a din like halakha. Does the extending of your arm, where you don't move your feet and you don't actually move your location, is that considered to be halakha, or is it not considered to be the halakha? And obviously that will have impact, which is the next statement of the Gemara, Imtim Salomar Savar Halakha Shlo Beregel Lo Shmo Halakha. If you believe that when you don't move your feet, that's not called halakha, Emakshava Moelek Klau, then there would be no indispensable halakha that takes place here, and that means that there would be no makshava that could be posel during halakha, according to Rabbi Shimon, in the bringing of the bazichim from the shulchan and the echal out to the mizbeach. Even when it's done correctly, which is that the shulchan is found on the northern side of the echal towards the western end of the kodesh, and then it's a long walk, you have to take it all the way from there, out of the kodesh, through the ulam, out of the ulam, into the azara, onto the mizbeach, no makshava during that point in time will have impact, because all of that holacha is something that is dispensable. And Rabbi Shimon believes if it's dispensable, then you can't have a makshava during that period of time that is posel. Now the Gemara continues. Amale Abaye la Amore de Rav Chista. So Abaye said to the, I always call the Amore like the megaphone of Rav Chista. That is because the Talmud Chacham would tell the Amora what he wanted to say, and he would say it maybe in Hebrew, or he gives highlights or explanations to the Amora, and then the Amora would be his megaphone. He would then tell the people what the Chacham was saying. He would both raise his voice so they could hear him, as well as maybe enhance or explain that which the Talmud Chacham was saying. So Abaye said to this Amore of Rav Chista, Bami nevi Rav Chista, please ask of Rav Chista, Holacha bezar mahu. What is the din if holacha is done by a zar? So let's remember that, and must come up again today, shechita, the beginning of the process of the korban, can be done by zarim. There's no requirement to have a kohen with regards to the shechita of the animal. In terms of kabbalat adam, specifically over there, the kohanim are mentioned. That's the psukim in the beginning of Vayikra by the Olah, where we learned to have vayikrivu. Over there, it requires bnei aron. So there is a requirement of Kohanim with regards to Kabbalat Adam, and there is also a requirement of Kohanim with regards to Zrikat Adam. The question is, by Holachat Adam, is there also a requirement that it be done by a Kohen, which would be the expression, Mikabbalah Veilech Mitzvat Kuna, from Kabbalah and onwards, it can only be done with Kohanim, or is that true of Kabbalah and Zrikah, but Holacha could be done by a Zar? Amalei kshera umikra misayini. He answered him, it is kasher, it's not a problem. And I have a pasuk that supports me, which is, vayishchatu et ha-pesach, vayizruku ha-kohanim et adam yadam, vahalivim mafshitim. So by the korban ha-pesach that was brought in the time of Chizkiyahu ha-melech, there in Divrei Yamim it describes that vayishchatu et ha-pesach. So the shchitat ha-pesach can be done even with zarim, even with people who are not kohanim. And then it says, after the Shechitat HaPesach, Vayizruku HaKohanim et Adam miyadam, that the Kohanim did the Zrikat Adam that they took from their hands. Well, their hands, the only reference there, the antecedent of their hands there would be those that were Shechting the Pesach. Well, those that are Shechting the Pesach are Zarim, that implies that those same Zarim brought the Dam to the Kohanim. So the Zarim did the Shechitah, Kabbalat Adam was done by the Kohanim, and then the Zarim, who did the Shechitat HaPesach, carried that dam to the Kohanim, and they did the Zrikah on the Mizbeach. So that would imply that Zarim did the Holacha, and it would be Kshera. Meitiv Rav Sheshet. Is that really true? We have certain people that are disqualified from doing Avodah in the Mikdash. Zar, someone who's not a Kohen, or even a Kohen who is disqualified from the Kuhuna, or disqualified from doing Avodah, Ve'onein, a Kohen who has lost one of the seven relatives that he has to be mitavel lehem prior to the burial of that individual. When he's in the status of an Onein, we know that for a Kohen Hedjot, that is Posel Avodah, Shikor, someone, according to Rashi, who is drunk, meaning Shtuya Yayin, that he drank wine. The Bali Tosafot questioned whether it's only limited to Shtuya Yayin, because there are other intoxicating beverages, according to some Tanaim, that also would disqualify the Avodah of the Kohen. And then Tosafot, in the end, it seems to come back to Rashi's explanation and say that it really is Shtuya Yayin, but just know that it might be more expansive than simply being inebriated by wine. Ubal Mum, a Kohen Bal Mum, Bikabalah, Beholacha, Bizrika, Pasul. All of these items disqualify when it's done with these three avodot. Kabbalah, holacha, and zvika. That means from Kabbalah and onwards, you need a Kohen, Kasher, to do the Avoda. One of the disqualifying parties was a Zar. And you just told me a Zar is Kasher. Here we have a Breita telling us that a Zar is Pasul. V'chein Yoshev. And similarly, someone who is sitting is also disqualified from doing the Avoda. And that's because it says, La'modu l'sharet, that in order to serve God, you need to be standing. V'chein small. And also the left hand. All the avoda has to be done with the right hand. We already discussed this a little bit with regards to Machloka, Rabbi Shimon, and the Chachamim, as to whether that applies to all avodot. Anytime you require a Kohen, you also require right. Or is it only where it mentions the word etzba or some other anatomical part that has a right and left side that it always means the right side? That's a Machloka Tanaim, but the avoda has to be done with the right hand of the Kohen. Tiyufta. That is a strong refutation of that position. That is, as I would be kasher with regards to doing the holacha in the Mikdash.
Okay, it's great that you refuted that position of Rav Chista, but nevertheless, he brought a pasuk to support his position. How are you going to explain that pasuk to reconcile with the braita that we just brought? The Ovid Masa Itzdaba, that the person acted like a pillar, or basically was an inanimate object. And that is that the Kohen passes it to that individual, they are stationary, they hold on to whatever it is that was passed to them by the Kohen. And then afterwards, the Kohen that's being Zarek the Dam comes and takes it from that individual. So that the individual just is acting as a way station. They're not doing anything that's actively engaged in the process. And in that case, the Tzar does not bring it any closer to the Mizbeach. Not by his walking. Not by the moving of his arms. But simply is the equivalent of an inanimate object. A table, a pillar, something upon which they are placing the Dam in the interim until the other Kohen comes and takes it to continue the processing. And in that way, there is no halakha that's being done by a zar in this situation, because the halakha bizar would have been pasul. So now we continue. Rabbi Rav Yosef, Damrei Tovayu, Rabbi Rav Yosef both believe, halakha bizar, machloket Rabbi Shimon v'Rabbonon. The question as to whether a zar is kasher or not really revolves around the machloket between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim. Rabbi Shimon d'amar, avodah she'efshar levatla, lav avodahi. So here you have a statement, and again, this is going to seemingly be a machloket amoraim today, as to what Rabbi Shimon's opinion is, but according to Rabbi Yosef, it sounds like that Rabbi Shimon believes that with regards to dispensable avodot, that they're not considered to be avoda. It's totally not an avoda. Since it's not an avoda, k'shera bizar. That's why you can use a zar to accomplish the holacha. L'rabbonon, on the other hand, who think that you can have a machshevet psul during the avoda of holacha, they would say that a zar is psula. And this is a machloket here as to what exactly is the position of the chachamim. We noted this on the Mishnah, and I'll just point it out to here again. Rashi says over here, according to the chachamim, the holacha, e efshar levatla. Rashi explains the position of the chachamim revolving around the fact holacha is something that cannot be dispensed with, and therefore it is an avoda, which means that they fundamentally disagree with Rabbi Shimon, and they believe that holacha is a required avoda, and it's not something that can be dispensed with. That statement of Rashi is, as we pointed out yesterday, contradicted by his statement later on in Tetvav Amud Aleph, and is against the position of the Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayot, who seems to indicate that the position of the Chachamim is that even though it is a dispensable avoda, they treat it like an avoda. And you can see a similar sentiment in the Shita Mekubetzet Od Bet over here, where he says, Nehi derabonon avdu efshar kishi'i efshar. And that the rabbonon equate an avoda that is dispensable with an avoda that is indispensable. And they treat them the same. But that doesn't mean the Chachamim fundamentally disagree with Rabbi Shimon. They believe halacha is also dispensable. Despite the fact that it's dispensable, they still consider it as an avoda, and maybe even an avoda chashuva, where machshava will have impact. And so here again, you see this machloket in the Rishonim, as to what the position of the Chachamim is. Is it that they argue fundamentally and believe that holacha is an indispensable avoda, or is it that they believe that shchita is treated like an indispensable avoda, even though it is a dispensable avoda? And now Rabbi Rav Yosef are suggesting that the machloka between the Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim will be impactful with regards to whether a zar is kasher or not. If it is a dispensable avoda, so Rabbi Shimon treats it as if it's not an avoda at all, and therefore it can be kasher bizar. On the other hand, the Chachamim, according to Rashi, who think that it's an indispensable avoda, according to the Shita Mekubetzet and the Rambam and the Perush HaMishnayot, where they think that it is treated like an indispensable avoda, then a zar would be pasul. But underlying this premise is
whether an avoda is dispensable or indispensable, that should impact on whether a zar is kasher or not. So Amar Luhu Abaye, Abaye says to his Rebbeim, Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef, Vashchita, Davuda Shiev Shadavatla, Ukshera Bizar. Wait a minute. Shchita is an indispensable avoda. No one can have a korban that is brought without shchita, and the korban will not be mutar ba'achila unless there is shchita. So that's an indispensable avoda. So yeah, when it comes to shchita, it's kshera bizarim. So that would undermine what you just said. So Rashi says that this question is a question on the rabbanan's position based on the assumptions of Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef. Just because the rabbanan say that halacha is iavshar levatla, that's why you would require a kohen and not a zar, then the same should be applicable to shchita. Because shchita is also an indispensable item, and therefore you should require a kohen and not a zar. But there we see that a zar is kshera. So Rashi says the question is on the position of the chachamim under this assumption of Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef. So then if you look in the Balei Tosafot, he says, Perish Rashi, Betema, the my pircha the rabbanan. Why is there a question on the rabbanan? Vadai lo bahatali. Because for the Rabbanan, that's not the correlation. The reason the Chachamim say that by Kabbalah it's pasul without a Kohen is because there's a requirement from Kabbalah Ve'elech to have a Kohen. The question they're asking is on Rabbi Shimon's position, which you are assuming now that since it's a dispensable item, therefore it does not require a Kohen. And what they're saying is, that can't be the reasoning because of the fact that they're makshir ezar b'shchita, even though it's indispensable. That's the nature of the question going to Balei Tosafot, that it's focused on Rabbi Shimon's opinion, not on the Chachamim's position. And Tosafot says that in the remainder of the questions of the Gemara fit better because they're all questions on this position of Rabbi Shimon based on the explanation of Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef. Amrulei, they answered him, shchita lav avodahi. That's not a problem. So shchita is not classified as an avoda. Well, how do you know that it's not an avoda? Rashi claims, mitkashu ba'kol apsulim. Since anybody who is disqualified from doing any avoda in the Mikdash is kasher to do shchita, that in itself tells you that it's not an avoda. Now, that's Rashi's explanation. The Balei Tosafot then challenge that and say, how could you say that? Isn't that the nature of the whole question of the Gemara here? As to whether it's kasher bizar or not kasher bizar? How can you say it's not classified as an avoda just because Zarim can do it? So at first, the Balei Tosafot back away and say, Mi yesh li yashay perusho. We can reconcile with Rashi's explanation because came into b'shum makom lo bayi kohen b'shchita lav avodahi. Since we find no manifestation anywhere in halacha where shchita requires a kohen to do it, that shows you that it can't be an avoda. There's never, ever any requirement of kohen associated with the din of shchita, and that's what it means that it is something that's clearly not an avoda, because zarim are always doing it, and it has no manifestation where a kohen is required. And that'll be the next question in the Gemara, which is we do find a manifestation of it, where we do require a kohen. But after that, the Balei Tosafot then bring two alternate opinions to try to explain that. The first is a Rabbi Yaakov Meorlins, who says, Mefaresh Talav Avodei Lefishi Shaveh Bechulim Bekodeshim. That is because the same procedure of shchita that's used in the Mikdash is the same shchita that is used to shecht animals that are chulin in order to make them mutar ba'achila. The fact that shchita is used and utilized outside of the Mikdash is an indication that it's not an avoda in the Mikdash. It's a procedure to be matar an animal, whether outside the Mikdash, whether in the Mikdash. But if that's the same thing that's done outside the Mikdash, it certainly can't be an avoda. Now that explanation is a little interesting only because the Torah itself only mentions the term shchita with regards to kodashim. That is in Sefer Vayikra. It speaks about shchita all the time. And the process of shchita, which is associated with the Mikdash. It's only later on that the Torah and Sefer Dvarim is matar shchita outside the context of kodashim. And even in that situation, it never mentions shchita explicitly. And that is because the ideal situation is that anytime someone went to eat basar, that they'd actually bring a korban in the Mikdash, and then eat the basar. So that would be a sort of way to be mekadesh one's consumption of food, in a way that a portion of it went on the mizbeach, and then you ate a portion of it. But obviously that's not realistic once you enter Eretz Yisrael. When you have a Mishkan in the middle and everybody can come to the Mishkan, that's a possibility. But it's not practical once you enter into Eretz Yisrael and people live so far away from the Mikdash. And that's what the Torah says in Sefer Dvarim, Gerechak Mimcha Makom. When the place is very far away from you, then you have the right to shech the animals outside. But the truth is, even in that situation, the fact that you can do Shkita B'chulin is really a borrowed from the Mikdash itself. It's really a way to be Mikdash, the animal, in a sense, outside the Mikdash, to remind us of what the ideal situation was. Similar to the reasons why you can't eat the dam and chaleb of chulin animals, because they went on to the Mizbeach. So that would question somewhat the premise of Rabbi Yaakov Orleans. But nevertheless, he does suggest over here the fact that it's found in areas of chulin is an indication that it is not something that's an avoda in the Mikdash. And then the Tosafot brings actually a third possibility, which is Velinira. He says, I think the reason that Shkita is not classified as an avoda is because of the fact that Shkita is permitted outside of the normal locations where avoda is done. And that is, with the requirements of Kodshei Kodashim must be done bitzafon, Kodshim Kalim must be done in the Azara. Anything associated with avodot of the Korbanot for Kodshei Kodashim must be done in bitzafon, and for Kodshim Kalim they must be done in the Azara. A person who is shechting can shech the animal even though he's standing in the south, as long as the shechita or the animal itself is found in the north. Similarly, if someone is standing outside the Azara and they are shechting the animal that's in the Azara, that's fine as well. The fact that the person who's doing the shechita can actually be standing outside of the location where it's necessary to perform the avodah shows you that it's not an avodah. That's what the Baalei Tosafot suggests. They bring additional proofs to that, but at the way in, they back away a little bit from this and say that there are other places in Shas which sound a little bit like Rashi, that Zareem are the most impactful factor as to determining why Shkita is not considered to be an avoda. So then the Gemara challenges that and says, Velo, is that really true that Shkita is not an avoda? When it comes to the para duma, if a zar does the Shkita for the para duma, then that is psula. And Rav explained why that is, because in the parshia of para duma, it says that Elazar HaKohen must perform it, or at least must oversee that which is performed. And also, Zot Chukat HaTorah, the word Chukah appears there. And we have a Mesorah that anytime a Parshia has the word Chukah in there, that means that the procedure itself, as dictated by the Torah, is Me'akev. So exactly as is written in the Torah, must be performed. And since it was done with a Kohen in the description of the Torah, that means that a Kohen is required anytime you do the Shechitat Apara. So according to the explanation of Rashi, the fact that a kohen is required for shechitat apara shows you that it must be an avoda, because it's not permitted to zarim. According to the other two reasonings in the Baalei Tosafot, you see the fact that we require a kohen is indicative of the fact that this must be an avoda, even though we said before, maybe it's possibly not an avoda, then otherwise why would you require a kohen over here? I said, shani para. I'll explain to you why you need a kohen here. It's the kochei bedek abayiti. It's nothing to do with the Mizbech, nothing to do with Avodah. It's Kodshei Bedek HaBayit. This isn't a Korban that is processed in the Mikdash. It's done on Har HaZeitim. And it's not even Avodah that's being done. It's a specific procedure that needs to be done with the Parah Adumah that's associated with Kodshei Bedek HaBayit. You can't prove anything about Avodah. It says, V'lav Kol Dekeinu, Maizun HaKal V'chomer. Kodshei Bedek HaBayit Avodah. It's classified as an Avodah with regards to Kodshei Bedek HaBayit because we require a Kohen, Kodshei Mizbech. Lava Vodahi? And now you're going to tell me by Kodshei Mizbeach it's not classified as an Avoda? That'd be strange that it would be classified as an Avoda for Kodshei Bedek HaBayit and not for Kodshei Mizbeach. Kodshei Mizbeach is really obviously of a higher level of Kedusha, and they have more requirements with regards to what Kohen processing them. So Amar Rav Shisha Breid Rav Yidei, Midya Hava Marot Negaim. Just because a Kohen has to process it is not a proof of the fact that it's an Avoda, because we have an example of that with regards to the seeing of Negaim. In the Parsha of Negaim, it says that a Nega is only considered to be Tamei or Tahor by the declaration of the Kohen. So the Kohen determines whether it's Tamei, he determines whether it's Tahor. Even a Talmud Chochum who knows what the Halacha is, he still can't declare the Nega to be Tamei or Tahor. You need the actual articulation by the Kohen to say Tamei or Tahor. He might need to be directed by the Talmud Chochum, but you still need a Kohen. So despite the fact that Lava Vodahi, even though it's not classified as an avoda, nobody thinks that seeing Negaim is considered to be an avoda, ubai kahuna, and it still requires a kohen. So you see that two are not correlated. Just because you require a kohen doesn't mean it's an avoda. Ella, it's a gzerat hakatuv. Just like by Marot Negaim, it's a gzerat hakatuv to require a kohen, so too by the Parah Adumah, the requirement for a kohen is a gzerat hakatuv. It's not an indication that it is an avoda. So that's how they dismiss the question of Abaye, that even though Shechita is an indispensable avoda, it can still be done by Zarim. That's because it's not classified as an avoda. Vari olacha, evarim lekevesh. the avodah shefshar levatlahi? What about the fact that taking the limbs of the animal and bringing them to the ramp of the mizbeach and then onto the mizbeach, which is a dispensable avodah, because you could have just shefted the animal right on the mizbeach, right on the kevesh, and then you wouldn't have to bring them there. So that type of holacha is dispensable. Upsula bizar. Yet it still requires a kohen. So you said before there's a correlation between the question of whether an avoda is dispensable or indispensable and the determination as to whether it's kasher bizar or lo kasher bizar. Here I have something that is dispensable, yet it's still requiring a kohen. Dichtiv, because the psukim say, v'kriv ha-kohen et ha-kol, v'kdira mizbeicha, that the kohen will bring everything. And we learned before, Amar Zohal Achat Evarim the Kevesh, that he is a reference to bringing the limbs to the Kevesh, to the ramp of the Mizbeach, to the Mizbeach. And there it says that there's a requirement for a Kohen to do that and to be Maktir them on the Mizbeach. Where it says, Echad the Goli Goli, where the Pasuk tells you explicitly you need a Kohen, that's when you need a Kohen. Echad the Lo Goli, Lo Goli. But in a case where it didn't specify, then our rule will apply. In Ochanami, had the Torah said nothing about Holachat Evarim the Kevesh, then we would have believed that it could be done by a Zar. The Torah went out of its way to tell us that it requires a Kohen. So the Torah told you that. That's the Halacha, then, once the Torah tells you that. In cases where the Torah doesn't tell you, then our principle's still alive, which is that if it's dispensable, you don't require a Kohen. If it's indispensable, you do require a Kohen. Or it says, V'lav kol techeinu, isn't it a Kavachomer? The taking of the limbs to the mizbeach and putting on the mizbeach, which is not ma'akev the kapara. We've learned this a number of times, that zrikat adam, placing the dam on the mizbeach, is the ikar kapara. Anything that's done after that point in time is she'arei mitzvah. It's the proper way to process the korban, but it's not ma'akev the kapara. So over here, putting the evarim on the mizbeach is not going to be ma'akev the kapara. Yet, ba'i kuna, it still requires kuna. Halacha dam, the ma'akva kapara, the halacha dam, which will stop the kapara. If you don't take the dam to the mizbeach and put it on the mizbeach, then it will ruin the kapara, because then you can't do zrika the dam, lo kol shekein. Certainly, then it should require a kohen. That logic would undermine what Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef says. And then we have Itmar Nami, you have another memra from Amar Ula, Amar Abelazar, that differs from the position of Rabbi Yosef, which is, Holocha bazar psula. That holocha done by a zar is psula. Afilu the Rabbi Shimon. Even according to Rabbi Shimon. So here you have the other view in Rabbi Shimon. This is, seems to be articulated by Rashi and the other Rishonim over here, which is that according to Ulam Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon believes holocha is an avoda. It's just an avoda gerua. So therefore, you can't have impact with it with regards to machshavot, the bloli shma and pigol, and these other things, because it's not a full-fledged avoda, because it's dispensable. But in the end, it's still classified as an avoda. And with regards to avoda, you do require a kohen. And therefore, even according to Rabbi Shimon, you would still require a kohen, even though machshava is not poselet by it. And you can see this in Rashi, Mishum de'en heter ha-kurban talui ba, v'lo karinim ba dvarim anvim lidei achila. Since it's not something that is essential for the kurban, and it's not something that brings the kurban to the possibility of being eaten, so that's why machshava doesn't impact. That's what we saw in the Gemara before, the limud, as to what is impactful in terms of machshavot. Aval avoda habili pasel bazar. But still in the end, it is an avoda, it's just an avoda gerua. But that avoda gerua will require a kohen. And so here we see, actually, the positions of Rabbi Rav Yosef versus Ulam Rav Yelazar really bring the difference that we noted in Rabbi Shimon's position. Whether Rabbi Shimon believes that holacha is just not an avoda at all, and therefore would be kshira bizar, or whether he thinks it's an avoda, just not an avoda chashuva enough that it's impacted by machshava, but he still classifies it as an avoda, and the nafkamina between them would be whether it's kasher bizar. That's the view of Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef. Whether it's Pasul Bazar, which is the view of Amar Ula Amar Balazar. Now the Gemara asks, Ibailuhu, Holacha Shalo Beregel, Shma Holacha, Olo Shma Holacha. When a person does Holacha, which means getting the dam to the mizbeach without actually walking, for instance, passing it, is that classified as Holacha, or is that now classified as Holacha? You can see in Rashi, this has implications for two areas. Number one is, Upasla Ba Machshava. If it's considered Holacha, then it would have an impact if you have a machshava there, because a negative machshava during holacha according to the Rabbanan would be posel. Oim asa zar psula. Or if a zar does it, is it considered to be psula? Because that will depend on whether you classify it as holacha or not. So that's what Rashi says are the nafkaminot. If you look in the
Shita Mikubetzet,
he brings from the Tabina Rabbeinu Peretz, and he says, Kach perisha kunchis. He says, Velo nihira. He says, I don't think that's the question. L'chein nira de l'inyan, With regards to whether machshava impacts on holacha or not, dishma holacha imke nifsala b'machshava. It's classified it as holacha, it's clearly ifsal b'machshava. V'lo shma holacha, it's not called holacha, imke navi holacha k'mi she'eino. It's as if it doesn't exist. V'tzarech lakzor v'lasotan, and you have to do it again. Ella, what is the question of the Gemara? L'inyan lakzor v'lasot kaboy. Gemara wants to know, do you have to go back and do it again? That's the nafkamina that they're looking for. The nafkamina is, if holacha was done in this way, and according to the chachamim, there's a requirement for holacha, does this classify it as holacha and you accomplished it? Or, if you do this, you haven't accomplished holacha, and now you have to go back and do it again. So he says that's the nature of the Gemara's question over here. Tashma, so Gemara says, why don't we bring a proof from the braita that we brought above, v'chein yoshev, v'chein small pasul. The person who's sitting and is trying to do the avoda while he's seated, or if he does it with his left hand, it's pasul. So the problem is that you're sitting on the ground because of the requirement of lamod u'lesharet. But implied in that is, ha'umei dumia d'yoshev, if someone's standing up, similar to sitting, it would be kasher. So it's if you're seated, that's the problem. But if you were standing in a stationary location, that would not be problematic. And we saw that reference to all three of the avodot, kabbalah, holacha, and zrika, only when you're seated is holacha problematic. But if you're standing up, then you would not be pasul for holacha, even though you are stationary and standing. So that would show you that holacha without moving your feet is still called holacha. So Mar says, no. Dilma yoshev de kashayif mishaf. The case of sitting down may not be that he's stationary. It may be a case where he's seated, but he's scooting himself along the ground. And so therefore he is moving, but he's moving in his seated position. So then, ome dumya de yoshev, then the situation in which you are standing, similar to that type of sitting, is the Nayid Porta. It's where you are shuffling along a little bit. You're not walking full steps. You're not taking full strides, but you're sort of shuffling yourself along. So that may be the possibility of what that Braita was speaking about, which is Yoshev is Pasul when you're scooting along the ground because you are Yoshev. But when you are moving, when you are standing, then you'd be kasher, and from that you can't prove as whether being stationary and doing a holacha would be considered as holacha. So then the Gemara says, Tashma, Shachat Israel, this is a Mishnah with regards to the Korban HaPesach, that the Korban HaPesach could be shechted by a Yisrael, by a Zar, V'kibel HaKohen, and then the Kohen does the Kabbalat Adam, Natuno LeChabiro, V'chabiro LeChabiro. They would set up a fire bucket line, and they used to pass the Adam and the utensil from the Kabbalat Adam, they would pass it from one to the next, until it reached the Kohen who did the Matan Dam on the Mizbeach. So over there, you're not moving anywhere, they're just passing the bucket one to the other, and it seems to be classified as holacha. Or it says, Adamnami denayin purto. Over there also, it's not that he was completely stationary, but he moved a little bit. He brought himself closer to the next party. He didn't just hand it to him. He moved closer. Umay kamash malon. So then what's that teaching us? If you tell me that the chiddush in that Mishnah of telling you that they did it in a fire line is to tell you that even if you don't move and you pass it along, that's called holacha, that's a chiddush. On the other hand, if you take that away from the Mishnah and say that's not what it's speaking about, it means that they walked one to the other and passed it to each other, then what's the point of the Mishnah telling us that they did it in a fire line? My kamashulan is, barova madrat melech. The more people involved in the processing of the korban, the greater the glory to the king, and therefore there is a benefit, or we actually look favorably upon involving more people in the processing of the korban at Pesach. And so if you have a choice between one kohen just walking up to the Mizbeach, or having a line of Kohanim that are all involved in it, we would prefer a line of Kohanim because of Barovam Hadret Melech. And that's what the Mishnah is teaching you, or the Chiddush out of that Mishnah. Tashma, Kibela Kasher. If the Kabbalat Adam was done by a person who was Kasher, meaning a Kohen, Benatan Le Pasul, and then he hands the Adam to someone who is Pasul, then Yachzir Le Kasher. He has to return it to the Kohen, who was the Kasher who did the Kabbalat Adam. It sounds from that, the handing over of the item is not a problem. And that is from two perspectives over here. First of all, we don't consider the handing by the Kohen to the individual to be holacha. And then they would have already accomplished holacha with the kasher, and then you wouldn't need to do holacha anymore. In addition, when the pasul hands it back to the kasher, we don't consider that to be a disqualifying holacha. So from both sides over here, you see that it is not classified as holacha. Mar says, no, you have to amend the statement over here. Ema yachzor hakasher ve'ikabla. It doesn't mean that the pasul will hand him back the blood, but rather yachzor hakasher, the kohen will go ve'ikabla and take it back from him. So that means that the individual actually did nothing. The kohen handed it to him in the first place, and then the kohen went ahead and took it back from them afterwards, which means that the kohen will now go to the other side of the pasul and then take it from him. So then the original halakha that was done by the Kohen by passing it to the Pasul, that already created or fulfilled the obligation of halakha. Then when the Kohen goes to the other side of the Pasul and takes it back, you don't need any more halakha because the halakha was accomplished in the first place. That doesn't mean you have to go now and rectify it by handing it back and redoing it. You simply continue on because the original halakha, the passing of the dam to the Pasul, was classified as halakha. If you do that, then you can't prove anything from this braita. Itmar, we have from the Amoraim, Amar Ulo Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Holacha Shelo Beregel, Lo Shma Holacha. Holacha that's done without the moving of the feet, without walking, that is not classified as Holacha. Efshar Litikuna, Olo Efshar Litikuna. So now the Gemara wants to know, given that psak of Rabbi Yochanan, that Holacha that is not done by Regel is not classified as Holacha, once it's done, can it be rectified or can it not be rectified? So whether it's done by a Kohen, it's still not classified as holacha when he passed it. And if a zar does, it's clearly not classified as holacha. It won't be pasul because he also didn't do any avoda there by passing it. But once that's done, can you move the item back, restart it, and then rectify the situation by doing holacha beregel? Tashma, kibela kasher, benatan le pasul. If the kasher did the kavalat adam and he handed it to the pasul, yakzir the kasher. Same bread that we brought before. You give it back to the kasher, which is that the Kohen gives it to the Pasul, and the Pasul give it back to the Kohen to do it over again.
The fact that you're returning it to the Kohen makes it sound like you can actually rectify the situation. And therefore, the braita would seem to indicate that there is a way to rectify it when it's a holacha that was done shelo beregel.
And even if you want to give the explanation of the braita like you did before, which is that the Kohen gives it to the Pasul, and the Pasul does not give it back to the Kohen to do it over again, which would have been indicative of the fact that you can rectify the situation. But rather here, the Kohen hands it to the Pasul, and then he walks to the other side of the Pasul and takes it back from him, and the Pasul is just doing what's called a Maisa Itzdaba. He's just standing there like as if he's a pillar, as if he's an inanimate object, and the coin's passing it to him and then taking it back from him, that would be problematic, because if you believe you can't rectify the situation, if salala, then the first action of the coin, where he passed it to the pasul, created the psul, because you say that it's not classified as holacha, there was never any rectification, so then this should be pasul. Why does the bright to say that it is kasher? Ella, it must be that there is a way to rectify the situation, because afterwards, when he does the remainder of the holacha, then he can rectify the situation. Gemara says, Misavartakai Zar Gavai. Why do you assume that the person, the Zar here that's involved, is standing towards the Mizbeach? And therefore, when the Kohen passes it to the Zar, he's bringing it towards the Mizbeach. And then when the Zar passes it back, that's a rectification of the situation. Or, in the situation where he passed it to the Zar,
and the way that you explained this right before, even though technically that was an explanation for the mandamar that olacha shelo beregel shmei olacha, nevertheless, you could over here assume that even if olacha lo shmei olacha, the fact that you still have more to go to the mizbeach allows you to rectify it in that situation. And that would be the reason why if you handed it to the zar, that the kohen would go back and take it back from him afterwards in order to accomplish that olacha afterwards. And that would be a rectification of the failure up until that point in time.
Lo, the kohen zar barai. It's a case where the Tzar is away from the Mizbeach. And everyone, the Kohen passes it out to the Tzar. And now when the Tzar hands it back to the Kohen to rectify it, he's back at the original location. And there was never any holacha that was done, and he can go forward now and do the holacha as if nothing happened. So it's not a rectification, it's simply going back to square one. He's starting to do the holacha where he should have started in the first place. And similar, if you view it the other way around, Kohen passed it to the Tzar. And then when took it back from the Tzar, the reason the first passing was not a problem if you can't rectify it is because he passed it outward, which is not doing an action that can't be rectified because that's not the direction of the holacha. The holacha needs to be in towards the mizbeach. So whatever he did before wasn't classified as holacha that needs to be rectified, and therefore when he takes it back and walks in, he's doing the holacha that was incumbent upon him. And even if the zar just acts like an itztaba, like an animate post, where the kohen passes him, takes it back from him, the Kohen then is just back where he started from. He placed it down for a second with somebody, and he took it back from them, and then continues on. He's doing his halacha at that point, and therefore you can't prove anything about tikuna from this braita.
Itmar, Amar, Ulo Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So we have a different version of this misora of Ulo in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, which says, halacha shelo beregel psula. Halacha that's done without a person making any movement, but rather by passing, psula. So that's a different word. Before we said it's lo shma halacha, holacha. It's not classified as holacha. and therefore it raised the question whether you could rectify her or not. If you say halacha shelo beregel is psula, when you do it that way, it is posel, then alma lo efshar l'tikuna. It's pretty clear that you can't fix it or rectify it at that point, because the action itself makes it psula, rather than just lo shma halacha. Okay, we're going to stop here. 7 lines down on the top of Tedvav Amin Aleph.